Welcome to Get a Grip with Shane Bacon, a production of iHeartRadio. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Get a Grip podcast. I am your host, Shane Bacon. Got a fun one for you this week. Went on a golf trip a couple of weeks ago with three of my buddies. One of them was Joel Klatt, who I'm sure you know, the lead analyst for college football at Fox, does an incredible job in that role and has for a few years and has become one of my good buddies. He's an excellent golfer to go along with, you know, the whole like played professional baseball and then was a starting quarterback thing at Colorado and now, you know, has an amazing job and an amazing family. But went on a golf trip and we just kind of wanted to chat about Pinehurst in general. We did this years ago in and around Bandon Dunes. You can find that episode still on the Clubhouse feed. If you go to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon and look up the episode with Joel Klatt I had about Bandon Dunes, just kind of giving you ins and outs and tips about what to do at Bandon Dunes, what not to do and those types of things. So we wanted to do something similar around Pinehurst because we spent a few days there and got to really experience it. So that is the chat today. A couple things before we get to Joel. I'm sure you've seen this as well, but started a podcast with my friends at Ping called the Ping Proving Grounds Podcast. And our first episode has been out, second episode dropping this week. Make sure you go check it out. Subscribe to it, download it, listen to it. I think you're going to be a big fan. Marty Jurtson, who was on this podcast last week, is my co-host for that. He's a man of many talents as well, much like Joel Klatt. He has seen and done many of things in and around the sport of golf over the last few decades. And we chat about everything from, you know, what does water do on the face of your irons to, you know, what app is available through our friends at Ping to help you in terms of your gapping with your golf bag to interviews with Sahith Theegala and many more Ping players and ambassadors in and around the sport. So give that a listen. And as I mentioned, subscribe to it, download it. You'll be doing all of us a big favor, and I think it'll do your golf game a favor as well. And we are inching closer to Father's Day. I wrote a children's golf book called The Golfer's Zoo, and there are copies and signed copies still available if you go to back9press.com/bacon. And The Golfer's Zoo, it's an excellent gift for a father in your life, a new dad, an upcoming father that, you know, has a baby on the way. All of those people, I think, will enjoy it as a Father's Day gift. It's something they could read to their kids and get them into the sport that they love as well. So, Ping Proving Grounds Podcast, The Golfer's Zoo. Let's get to my man, your man, Joel Klatt. Everybody, that is Joel Klatt. You know the man. I really like the hat today, Joel. Is that Rose Bowl hat?
Yeah, Rose Bowl. Shout out to all the people at the Rose Bowl, by the way. They're fantastic. It's one of my favorite things to do, by the way. Shane, I don't get to go to many football games, right? Like, I'm always covering them. So I'm when I say go, I mean as a fan. And I never get to take my kids to a game except for the Rose Bowl. So it's like they've been to like three football games in their life. Two of them have been the Rose Bowl. I'm like, geez, talk about spoiled.
They're like, Dad, another Rose Bowl shirt? You're like, yes, we're buying all of the merch. I don't do this. I try to get out of these stadiums as fast as possible when I work. By the way, Joel Klatt has a podcast, The Joel Klatt Show. Make sure you're listening to that. It's awesome. You've been ranking. I think you ranked offseason teams, and you've been talking realignment as of late on the pod. Is that fair?
Yeah, good call. Yes, we've done some offseason stuff, but they can go back and listen to those. You can find us anywhere you get your podcast at Joel Klatt Show on social media. So thank you for giving that a pub. But I've got a great series coming out starting June 12th. I'm talking with all the like biggest names in college football, Nick Saban, Ryan Day, Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner, among others. And we're sitting down for a little bit longer form interviews about the sport in general, and not specifically about their team or anything this year. Really fun conversations. Those start June 12th and they'll run all summer. So check that out.
That'll be on the podcast. And also, mm-hmm. I'm assuming you can watch it visually somewhere, maybe on social or something like that. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, we're on, I think, YouTube. And
can we get into the nitty gritty that you might be like the worst phone human on the planet?
I mean, for sure.
Like, you don't know how to do any of it. I mean, any of it. What are you, 41?
No. So we're going to get into this. We went to Pinehurst and we'll talk about that. But you guys were all like, hey, like, you know, I was like, well, great. I land at whatever such and such time. I'll just like Uber down. And they were like, you guys were all like, no, like use Lyft instead. And I was literally, I'm staring at my phone and I'm like, what is Lyft? What is going on? And I had to finally text you guys like, hey, what are you talking about? And then, you know, the reaction was amazing.
Yeah, it's great. Before we get into the Pinehurst trip, because that's the main reason we're chatting today. Also, obviously, talking a lot about Arizona football. But you have a big golf tournament tomorrow. You know, people don't understand this. I mean, this is golf season for Joel Klatt. Like, yeah. When your last game is played and you go to the Rose Bowl with the fam, basically from that point forward is Joel Klatt golf season.
Yeah.
Until August?
Yeah, I mean, listen, like unless there's some sort of like school event or I have to do like some work trip or something, if it's a school day, my wife is like, yeah, like if the kids are in school, like you should probably be playing golf. And I'm like, done. So I play a lot of weekday golf in the mornings when the kids are at school. And I mean, I'm addicted. You know this. We've been on now several golf trips together. We used to work the broadcasts for the U.S. Open together. And I'm addicted. I absolutely love it. I've gotten better over the years to the point where I want to try like these little qualifiers. So I'm going to be playing in the Cal State Amateur Qualifier on Wednesday morning at Michael Block's club.
Yep.
I'm going to see Blocky at Arroyo Tribuco. So, I mean, we'll see. I have no expectations. I'm not as good a player as you are. Like you are a very good player and can generally qualify for something like this out of a qualifier, a state amateur or something like this. I'm not, I do this for fun. And you know, hopefully just play well, you know, the last time, well, it wasn't the last time, but I did try a US Open local qualifier, you know, this, and I was like, not playing great, but I was like, you know what? I'm going to try it.
The last 17 holes were epic. The last 17 holes, I thought you played pretty well.
Well, last 16, because on number two.
Sorry. Last 16. That's right.
2T, OB, OB, 12. A 12.
Yeah.
Second hole of competitive golf in my life. But yeah, it'll be fun. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, it's so funny. I just played in that Ike qualifier last week, and I got through right on the number. I shot 74, and that was the number it took to get in, and the Ike is at my club, so I'm really pumped about this in a few weeks. I was talking to the kid I was playing with who also got through. He just graduated college, and I was talking to him probably 6-7 holes into it, and we were both around even par, and I said, nobody that doesn't play qualifier golf, like this isn't tournament golf, qualifier golf, understands what qualifier golf is like, because
right. You're
playing like relatively conservative golf. You are picking your spots. And I mean, when I say picking your spots, like four swings around
right. That
maybe you're going to get aggressive with,
right.
But all you're trying to do, Joel, is make par. That is the only goal. And when you go out and play recreational golf, I mean, we'll get to this, but you played the day after our Pinehurst trip, and I think you shot 67 at your club, which is not an easy golf course, by the way, and that is a very impressive number. But when you're going out and playing recreational golf or you're on a trip with the boys at Pinehurst, in your mind, on every tee, the goal is to make a birdie or make an eagle or do 100%, something special.
100%, and especially
you flip it into this par world of like par is the best score you can make, and right. Hopefully I sprinkle in a birdie. And it is a very, very big change in the way your mind works as a golfer.
I think that the hardest thing to do is, it's not, tee shots are pretty similar, right? Like you're trying to, now listen, are you going to pound driver as much in a qualifier? Probably not, right? Am I going to take a 4-iron here and there? Yeah, you bet. The difference is once you're in the fairway, because in recreational golf, and you say this all the time, and people listening to this podcast should hear it, and I'm sure that they have, every hole on the planet is a birdie hole from the fairway.
Yep.
Unless you're playing greens like Colonial last weekend that are literal parking lots. Like every hole, if you're a good player, you can birdie. Every course is soft enough where you can make a birdie from the fairway. Therefore, guess what we do? We stare at the flag, whether it's short-sided, behind a bunker, whatever. We stare at the flag and we always generally play our stock shape. So mine's a little draw with the iron. That means pin 4 off the right, I'm aiming 5 yards into the rough, drawing it in there. Like, let's go. Right. That's the hardest thing to do is then like remove the flag and say, Okay, I'm just trying to hit this big green. Yeah, we'll see what happens, man. I'm excited for it. I always get nervous, and I'm sure people out there that have tried qualifiers, my biggest nerves come from tee shots. Like, okay. I'm just like, just keep it in play, right? Because if I don't have a penalty stroke, I'll be close to the number.
Totally agree, yep.
So that's the whole day for me. It's just like, how do I keep it in play off the tee?
Yep. The one piece of advice I'd give you tomorrow is if you're sitting on a tee shot going, I don't think it's driver, don't hit driver. Just hit your three wood or hit your iron and just get it in the fairway and go about your business from there. Because there are a million times where you hit that driver you're unsure of and you block it right,
yes.
You know, or you pull yes. hook it left. You go, why in the hell did I pull that club? I didn't want to hit it in the first place.
What are we doing?
It's so frustrating. So we just got back from a trip to Pinehurst, and it was you, me, and my buddy Ashton,
yeah.
who I know I've talked a lot about on this podcast with. I used to play professional golf with Ashton. He doesn't play a lot of golf anymore, still incredibly good and played some great golf we'll get into on the trip. And the fourth member was my buddy.
He played great.
Oh, he played Tobacco Road. He lit the lid on fire.
Yeah,
the entire day. It was on fire like the Roadrunners we were pulling out. It was Ashton walking off the golf course. But he had a great week with the golf course after the first round. And then our buddy Andrew was mm-hmm. the fourth member. And you three had never been to Pinehurst. I mean, you guys had never experienced any golf in that area. I think Ashton said he played maybe a junior tournament there, you know, 15, 20 years ago, but didn't remember anything about it. When you were thinking about what Pinehurst would be versus what it was in reality, what was the biggest difference for you, Joel, who I know is a golf nut who reads and checks things and knows about so many places around the country that call themselves kind of homes of golf?
I was immediately like almost shocked, but surprised of the scope of what Pinehurst
yep.
is, you know, and because I'm used to, and this is not a knock because this is my favorite place on the planet. Like a trip to Bandon Dunes to me is my favorite place on the planet, but it's totally different than that. You know, you're going to a place with five courses. You're not going to leave that specific property up
right.
in Bandon. Pinehurst is very different because you've got 15 great courses all within 25 minutes. And I didn't really realize what it was until we got down there. And then after that, I started to immediately realize like, oh, like there's something for everybody.
Yep.
There's the tough course that you can challenge yourself. There's the really fun course. There's the cradle. So the variety and scope was what I initially was not only impressed with, but kind of surprised about having not been there before.
Yeah, Andrew and I got there a night before you guys arrived. You arrived, I think, in the morning, that Monday morning, and then mm-hmm. Ashton got in later that day. And I remember Andrew and I pulled out that morning from the Talamore, which we were staying at, which was lovely, by the way, and we'll get into that in a moment. But we pulled out, and there was a golf course on the right, and I remember Andrew mentioning, like, is that the course, is that from the resort here? And I went, Andrew, like, you'll never see more golf courses in your life than you're going to see driving around the village of Pinehurst, because like you said, the scope is it's almost hard to believe that it exists. Like you laugh when you hear we're going to play Pinehurst number 8 today. And then after you spend 2 or 3 days driving around Southern Pines and Pinehurst and even going a little bit deeper into some of the other areas, like going to Tobacco Road, you realize that Pinehurst is a part of this, but this area has more golf than you're ever going to see in your life. If you're in a car, you know, driving the streets.
Let's put it this way. You could be down there for probably 2 straight weeks and not play the same course twice.
Yeah, you play 36 a day and not play the same course twice. I agree.
Sure. And there would all be, you know, there would be a flavor for everybody in there. There's no doubt. I loved it. And I had never played golf. I've not played a lot of golf in the South. We played in South Carolina once at Yeamans. And other than that, I've never played golf in Florida. I've never, you know, I know North Carolina is not, you know, way deep in the South, but this was fun. This was very fun. And certainly a type of topography that I wasn't quite expecting either, kind of rolling hills, pines everywhere, obviously in the name, but man, it was really cool.
Joel, I'm just gonna like take a side street here for a moment, because I grew up in Texas, and Texas is not considered the South, which is really weird. It's just strange that it's kind of like it's its own entity.
Like Virginia is the South and Texas isn't. What, it's like, what?
Like you deal so much with college football. Like, what is the South? Is the South
SEC?
SEC, that's what it is.
Around the SEC, okay. That's the South. That's the new South. College football has now defined the geography for America. And now
it's just so strange. Like, you know, I mean, I had mentioned, when I was in college at Arizona, it's like, where are you from? You're like, oh, I'm from the South. I'm from Texas. And you get side eyes if somebody was from like South Carolina. Like, what the hell is this guy talking about?
Pretty much everywhere except for the South, you say your specific state where you're from. And then if you're from the South, it doesn't matter if you're from Charleston or Atlanta. You rarely hear that. You just say, like, oh, I'm from the South. You know, like, for instance, we had this kid. Oh, man. And listen, I'm a sarcastic guy. You know that, right? You know me well enough. I'm doing these USFL games on Fox in the springtime. And we have this kid. I call him a kid because he's just out of college. And he's in the truck. And I've never seen him before, you know? And he's like sitting on this little desk and he looks up at me like this. When I walk in, I look down and I was like, you're new, you know? And he's like, oh, yeah. And I was like, I'm Joel. And he was like, I'm Crawford. And he had like the comb over.
Yeah.
And I was like,
every haircut everybody has. Yep.
And I was like, hey guys, Crawford's from the South. And he was like, how'd you know? I was like, well, your name's Crawford and you've got the waff comb over. And the truck just like explodes in laughter. And he's like, you're right. And then we start to get into like, where are you from? He's like, Virginia. And then I started thinking to myself, like, Virginia is not the South.
Right.
But anyways, I digress.
Yeah. I mean, it is. It's just funny. I mean, the haircut, you're wearing like Vineyard Vines. Like,
oh, yeah.
You probably own multiple Masters polos. Like, you're from the South. We understand. You know, Yeti. You have Yeti.
Oh, 100%. You wear boat shoes to the college football game, you know, all of that.
Yeah, a lot of Yeti stickers on your on your livelihood. Maybe it's your car. Maybe it's your cooler. So you got in after Andrew and I got to play the Talamore, which is where we stayed. The villas were great. I mean, if you're looking for a place, you know, to stay with four buddies, I thought it was perfect. You know, you got two beds in one room, and it had plenty of room and had a big TV. I mean, kind of all you're really looking for. So we were thrilled. I don't think any of us really knew much about that place going in.
I was really impressed with the place. Another thing that I really loved about it had laundry. You know, this is an underrated thing, like on a golf trip, because whatever it is, right? Like, you want to do socks or whatever, and we were able to do that. So that was an underrated part. And then two, I think that you have to know the type of golf trip group and guy you are when you go. When we go, there's not a huge amount of like just hang, right? We're going to go and play golf. We're going to be really tired. Then we're going to probably have some night putting, and then we're going to go to bed, you know? And it's like, we're going to watch the fourth quarter of whatever game is on, and then we're going to go to bed. And for that, I thought it was really perfect, you know?
Yeah, I think you nail it. And I mean, I think one of the keys to the golf trip that I think a lot of people maybe screw up on or don't plan out is exactly what you said about knowing your group, because our group was on the same page. I mean, all four of us were there to hang out together, to play as much golf as possible. We weren't looking for the fanciest dinners. I mean, you and I went and got Chick-fil-A one night so we could continue to night putt. Like, we weren't.
And it was really good.
And it was fantastic, by the way. But like, that wasn't our goal. And like, if we were mapping out or writing out what the plans were for the week, I feel like we would have hit those plans. We played as much golf as humanly possible at as many different golf courses as we could play. And we spent minimal time doing other things besides sleep. And I mean, nobody minded if you were sleeping in a room with somebody else or, you know, sharing a room or doing whatever. Like, everybody was pretty chill. Joel, I posted this on social media. One of the funniest things and one of the funniest parts of our golf trips now is all of us are either 40 or almost 40.
Yeah.
And we've traded in the big bottles of liquor or, you know, packing the cooler for a little beer for like the rollers or the Theraguns. And I think we had two Theraguns and three rollers between the four of us. Like, that is the focus now on these golf trips, is making sure the body is prepared for the next day of 36.
There was a bottle of Advil on the counter.
Just on the counter. That's right.
On the counter. And then there were, you know, the two travel rollers and three Theraguns. and the like three Bluetooth speakers. And it's that's our and my personal favorite, a giant economy bag size of Swedish fish.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, I'm in heaven. But yeah, man, I mean, like, as I get older, that's the thing. If I'm gonna go play, you know, 36 holes a few days in a row, I can't just roll out.
It's crazy, but I'm right there with you. It's happened the last couple of years. Gosh.
I've got to, yes. And I've got to stretch, roll my back out on a foam roller, you know, and then I've got to hit my hips with the Theragun, or else it's like my swing will not work. I cannot move, you know, so I got to know where you're at in the stage of life.
It's the range ball thing for me too, Joel. It's knowing that if I don't hit, and I don't need to hit balls for 30 minutes, but I need to hit a few wedges, a few irons, and I want to see a couple drivers in the air before I play a round of golf. And I used to be like Captain Cold Turkey. I mean, right. I would almost plan my day to arrive at like a Phoenix Country Club, roll a couple of putts and go to the first tee because it was right there. I almost prided myself on the fact that I didn't have to warm up, and things have changed because I need to make sure I see a few in the air and make a couple of moves. And like you said, spend 20, 30 minutes on the body is a real thing at this point in our lives.
I have to feel the club. For me, it's not so much a driver in the air as it's much, I have to feel some turf interaction.
Okay.
Like that's the one for me. I've got to feel, and it's not a wedge turf interaction. I've got to feel like an 8 or a 7 iron. Like, how does that hit the turf today? Am I taking a big divot or I'm not? Am I sweeping it? Because whatever happens in that first couple of swings, it ain't changing.
That's what I'm playing with.
Am I stiff and sweeping or am I flexible and digging? Here we go.
What's your plan for tomorrow with the qualifier? Like, what time would you like to get there before your round?
Okay, so this is great because I think this also goes to just a recreational golfer. I think sometimes we build up rounds or we have them planned so far in advance and we build them up and we're like, man, I'm gonna get there an hour early and hit balls. And I never do that, to your point, right? Like when I go play, when I shot 67 the other day, I literally had time for like 5 swings on the range and I rolled 2 putts and then like rolled out and we all toss balls and it's like, okay, who are you? And we're, you know, like, let's go 2 down autos and you just put the peg in the ground and you go. So I'm somewhere in between. That's clearly not what I want to do. I haven't played that course, Arroyo Tribuco, in a few months. So I want to, at least the most time I'm going to spend is on the practice putting green.
Yep.
What's the pace of the greens? What are they doing? And then I want to hit a few chips because I want to know what the turf is like, what the grain is like in that area and on that course right now. So the plan is I'm hoping to get there. I'm going to initially hit some chip shots about 40 minutes prior to tee time. And then I'm going to roll some putts. And then probably about 20 minutes prior to tee time, I'm going to go take max 15 swings,
okay,
20 swings at max. And then, you know, go to the first tee.
Yeah, I think you were spot on in terms. I mean, obviously you've played a lot of sports in a lot of different areas, and you've seen a lot of like preparation and things that go into the mindset of an athlete. I do think trying to make it as similar to how you typically play is probably the best. You know, I mean, as you said it, like my dad was out here for my US Open local qualifier this year, and I told him I wanted to get to the course 45 minutes before. And he thought I was insane. You know, he's like, whoa, no. We need to, you sure you don't want to get there like 90 minutes before? I'm like, no, man, like same as you. I mean, I'm going to hit 25, 30 balls with 5 clubs. I want to hit a couple chips and a couple bunker shots for me. I always like to hit a couple bunker shots because I hate having a bunker shot the first one I have being an actual tournament.
Oh, interesting.
And I want to roll a few putts and a few short putts, and then I want to rock and roll. And the last thing I want to do is be sitting around thinking, you know, that's not a good thing for a golfer, just to be on the range going, I guess I could hit a few more 8 irons.
Well, and by the way, like the last thing I want, if I'm going to make a bad swing, I want to be like the first couple swings. Cause then I can be like, no, I'm just loosening up. You sit there and hit balls for too long and you're like, man, I'm hitting it great. And then one goes squirrely.
Yep.
That's in your head.
Yes. Totally.
Like, so, we are not pros.
Right.
Those guys can get there as early as they want. You know why? Because they are machines. They hit the ball right out of the middle. They are so good and so much better than all of us. They can chip for however long. If I chip for too long, I'm going to fat at least five of them. Then all day long, I'm going to get in front of a chip and be like, oh, I don't want to
don't fat the chip.
Right. So let's all collectively take a step back. We're not good enough to be there an hour before. And let's get there 40, 45 minutes, make sure everything's working, and then go tee it up.
Joel, when you were playing quarterback at Colorado, how early would you get to games? Like on a game day, when would you get to the stadium? Let's call it a home game. So obviously, because if you're away, the bus is taking you. But in terms of
the bus would take us at home games too. We'd stay in a hotel and the bus would take us. So we were there 2:20 before kick, 2 hours and 20 minutes before kick.
What is it now? Like what do these teams arrive now? Similar?
Similar, a little earlier. Yeah, 2 hours, 30 minutes.
Okay, so not too much difference.
But I had a regiment, you know, like I knew exactly what that time was going to be like, when I was going to get taped, then I was going to get dressed, then I was going to get stretched, then I was going to go out. You know, I would throw the route tree with the same people from the same spots on each side of the field so that I could feel the wind, and then I'd go back. You know what I mean? So like, it was regimented, there's no doubt.
Yeah, minute by minute, you had it planned out. So going back to Pinehurst, so Tallamore is where we stayed. Now, you didn't play that golf course, so this is going to be kind of my takeaway from the golf course. But Andrew and I played it. We teed off. I think we were the first off. We flew around, by the way. I think we played in like 2.5-3 hours. But it was a great surprise. I mean, I hadn't heard much about the golf course going into it. As we already talked about, Pinehurst has a million golf courses that everybody asks if you're playing or obviously puts on their itinerary when they go there. This was – I'm going to call this, as you mentioned Bandon earlier, this to me is like the sheep ranch of our trip. It was an awesome starter to the golf trip. The golf course was an enormous surprise to both Andrew and I. We both loved it, and we kept trying to find a time that we could all four go out and play it before we left. We unfortunately couldn't find that window, but the golf course was sensational. The logo is sensational. You know me. I mean, I love a good golf course logo.
Big logo guy. Yes.
Awesome logo. It's like the llamas on a flag, and then they actually have the llamas on the golf course. I think they're over by the 14th or 15th hole. I FaceTime my son, and he's like, I can't see him, and then he was annoyed at me about that. But, you know, the golf course was great. And, again, I would say if you're going to go on a Pioneers trip and this is something that you, in your proxy, you're at least considering Tallamore, maybe you're going to stay there because I know they do a lot for that stay-and-play packages. It was an awesome place to start your trip. It is a golf course where you're not going to lose a lot of golf balls. You're going to make some birdies. You're going to have a lot of fun. The greens were spectacular. Mm. They were some of the best greens we played on the entire trip. But two thumbs up on this place, a great surprise. And when you're surprised on a golf trip, that's one of the great things.
I couldn't agree more. I was really bummed that I didn't get to play it after the way you guys chatted about it. I know we're going to get into some of the other courses, but one of the things I was really bummed about was not getting there because when you guys kept saying like, man, it was a great starter to the trip.
Yep.
This is the other element of a golf trip. Wherever you're going, if you're going to play multiple courses, do your best to really think about the order in terms of level of difficulty and like what, you know, which one you're most excited to play, where you want your game at that point, you know, things of that nature. And so, so for instance, like I would never want to go to Pinehurst and have my first round be number two.
No, never, never.
Cause it's too tough, right? Like I need a little, you know, starter before that. And I would not want to go to Pinehurst and have number two be my last course when I'm inevitably, you know, 8 to 7 rounds in a 5-day period.
Right.
So like, think about order. Tallamore was a perfect starter for you guys. I was bummed I didn't get to play that one.
Yeah, had a lot of fun there. And then you got in and we started with Pinehurst number 8, which I had played before. They redid the greens. You hear a lot of people tout 8. It's a good starter golf course too. I mean, for you, I would love your thoughts on that in terms of getting a trip going off number 8 because it's a little off property too. I mean, it's not, you know, you're not going to the main clubhouse where 2 and 4 and the cradle and all that stuff is. So it's its own entity when you go to number 8.
I really enjoyed the layout. Loved the layout. Reminded me a little bit of Yeaman's Hall, which I already mentioned on this.
Wow, what a compliment.
Right. And like, you know, the way that it kind of weaves around and in and out of the trees. the greens were new. That was the hardest part of, yep. of plan eight were the greens, because they were just hard, right? Which there's nothing they can do about it. They were just, it was really tough to land the ball on the green and keep it on the green. But having said that, like that was the type of place in particular, if like the greens were in a place where they were normal and where they will be, that's certainly a course I would have loved to have played two times, you know, because the layout was so good. The par fives are gettable. There's some really cool tee shots where you're hitting over the entire lake. We took video of that, you know, like the angles and everything. So those were really fun. And it's a course that I feel like you could play pretty well if your game's in a good spot.
Yeah, birdie holes, par threes are cool. You know, riding carts. That's another thing about this golf trip that I think we probably will get into. And what better time than now? I mean, you know, one of the great parts about this golf trip that's a little different than places like Bandon and Streamsong and Cabot and Scotland is we rode in carts on almost every round. And
it was fun.
It's underrated. You know what's so funny is, like, diehard golf people despise golf carts.
Well, I'm a traditionalist. I love to walk and carry my bag, and I have my, you know, little wood thing that holds up my carry bag.
And I'm a pro. I like to walk. Like, I walk most of my rounds in the Northeast. But God, riding a cart's awesome. It's awesome.
You're not gonna huff your bag eight times in 4 days.
No,
you're just not.
No.
So it comes down to you're either taking a caddy, which flip a coin, or you're taking carts.
Yep.
And I loved the fact that we had a couple of rounds where we could just be us four, have the speaker going, you know, like, and just play. And that to me was as big of a surprise as anything else, is I loved that element of it. And it's something that I think, you know, like, for instance, I think that when I do go back to Bandon, I'm going to plan two or three rounds where I do carry my own bag.
Interesting.
Because the caddy element adds something. If you're a sub five, a caddy is a crapshoot. It really is. And this is not a knock against caddies, because I love, my favorite thing in the world playing golf is to play around a golf walking and not carry my bag.
Right.
However, it's a crapshoot with the caddy. Like, who are you going to get? Are they up to it? What type of advice do they give? Are they any good? You know, those types of things can ruin a round really quickly. And so for that instance, like, playing eight in carts was awesome.
Yeah.
Playing Tobacco Road in carts was awesome. And we had such a good time because of it.
Yeah, and you'd mentioned the greens at eight. I played eight a few years ago, and obviously the greens weren't brand new. And you mentioned they were firm and they were slow, which is a hard mix in terms of scoring. And so, you know, there wasn't a whole bunch of scoring in our group. We were playing, I think we played left, right, center or something against each other.
Yeah,
and and had a good little battle because we were still waiting for Ashton to arrive. But yeah, I mean, I always love eight, and I always walk off that golf course. You know, the couple times I've been lucky enough to go out there and play it. And I think it's a good addition to any itinerary to Pinehurst. I think it's an awesome golf course. Like you said, you can get the par fives. You can hit shots on the par threes. There's some really cool tee shots. And I understand when you talk to locals in the area why some of them say it's their favorite course within the Pinehurst Rota.
Well, and remember, you don't deal with the absolute, and I don't want to call it chaos, but just the busyness of the resort where there's two and the four and Cradle and all that stuff. So the range isn't gigantic. There's not a lot of people there, and it's right there next to the first tee.
I love that.
The putting green is right there.
It's by the first tee.
100%, right? So you can chip, you can do it. Like, there's a little short game area just to the side of first tee. The range is just to the other side of first tee. The putting green is right there. And because of that, like, it's its own entity and very fun and very cool.
So if the range and the putting green are right by the first tee, is it hard to miss your tee time? Because we did.
That's right. That's
skill set. Listen, we bring a lot of skills to golf trips, and not totally knowing what's going on at any point during them is one of our great skills. I mean, there was literally nobody on the range.
Nobody.
And we missed our tee time.
And the starter's right there. But I do have to say, just from a personal note, I hear kind of the, like, okay, I can't remember. Let's just say it was like 120, you know? And I was like, all right, it's like 118. And so I was like, all right, one more putt. And I started walking down. And right then, Andrew walks to the bar and you got on a Zoom call. And I was like, well, this is interesting. I was like, so how are we going to tee off? So and then I didn't say anything because I was like, well, like, I'll just sit here. And so I just grabbed my club again and was like, I guess I'll hit a couple shots. Then you finished your Zoom and then you were like, I got to hit a couple four irons. And I was like, well, it's 140 now.
I think we were off 20 minutes ago. And to be fair, the starter was very nice about it. I mean, they weren't totally slammed at this point in the day, but the best is the text on a golf trip that's not meant to be urgent, but it is urgent, where it's like, hey guys, we're up. And I think you sent like, we're on the tee, you know, and like Andrew, like you said, Andrew had gone to the bar 20 minutes ago. Like, I hadn't seen this guy in half an hour. I mean, we don't even know where he went.
I don't know what he was doing. He was in there like shotgunning beers for 20 minutes. And then he like strolls out. And I was like, hey,
all calm and collected.
We're up. And he's like, now? And I'm like, yes, now.
Well, no. actually like half
20
an hour
minutes ago.
But yeah, so the ranger was confused on two green. He's like, wait, what group are you guys?
We're like, Bacon? And he's like, Bacon? Like, it just shocked. And he was like, oh, we thought you no-showed. Yeah. And we were like, nope, we're here. He's like, well, we had you as a no-show.
We overshowed, actually. That was the problem. We showed too much of ourselves at this golf course. We had too much time on the range. But 8 was great. Ashton arrived, and everybody was there for the next day, which was one of the ones I was the most excited about because, you know, I think the Cradle is one of the coolest, most unique places in all of golf.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Bandit Preserve is an unmatched par three. And, you know, you can go to like Hamilton Farms and go through like the great par three courses in the world, right? But in terms of a place just being in the middle of one of the coolest places in golf, the Cradle is a very special spot.
The Cradle was awesome. It was awesome. And underrated part of the Cradle. I know you're going to like this from me in particular.
Uh-oh.
Was everything's under 120, 25, right? Yep. Right around there. So you've got a lot. There's a couple 40s, you know, a couple 60s. Underrated part is that they had mats down. And so you're not chili dipping it and like getting really frustrated, which I say that for me, cause like, that's my miss, right? Like you get me from 40 yards, 40% chance I'm going to chili dip it. Right. And so like, I know that sounds crazy from like, you know, I'm a zero, you're a plus. I loved hitting off the mat. It made it more fun. It made it way more fun.
For the shots that the Cradle asks you to hit, the, like you said, the 40-yard nipper to a tuck left flag or the chippy one up the hill to a back flag where you could literally putt it off the tee if you wanted or you could skip back a 60-degree. Those shots off mats are almost more fun to hit. I had a lot of people on social say,
totally,
why are the mats down? When are the mats going?
No. Mats made it better.
Yes, I agree with you.
Because like you can't keep the tee box. You can't get, it's impossible to have a perfect tee box at the Cradle. There's like, right? I mean, like everybody is hitting an iron there and they're hitting a wedge there. Yep. Yeah. So trying to hit those nippers off of sand, that would be impossible. It would be totally impossible. You would have, how many holes are there? Nine impossible tee shots if it's not mats.
It would have actually been kind of funny to see how many shots we would have chunked. I mean, you know, it was a bit sandy. It's like, how many of these without a tee would you not hit solid? I played 2 days ago, Joel, and I made a birdie on maybe the hardest hole at our golf course is 13. Okay. And it's really fiery right now. And so if you're 5 feet past the hole, you might putt it off the green. If you hit it short of the hole location, it might come all the way off the green. I hit it like a foot to get it back to even for the day. And I wasn't playing great. So I was excited about that because, you know, to me these days, some of my most fun rounds are when I don't have it to see what I can find.
Yeah.
Like what can I tape together? Right. And the next hole, I hit a great three wood in the middle of the fairway and just absolutely, absolutely chunked a sandwich, the likes of which I'm not sure I've done in years. And that feeling when you look up, when you hit it off contact, and you look up to where you're expecting to see a ball fly somewhere at the green from 115 yards.
Oh.
And to see it just going 25 or 30 yards.
Oh.
It's one worst. Of the more demoralizing feelings a golfer can have.
It's the worst. It's still, I would rather do that from the fairway than like, I drove it. So five is a short par four at our club. I drive it to the front edge. I'm like a yard off, pins back right. And I'm like, I'm going to chip it back there. And it's just like,
you hit it like 8 yards. And you're like,
I hit it like 14 inches. Like,
so sand wedge wasn't the right play. Got it. I'm gonna putt this one. I'm gonna go ahead and putt this one.
Hey, John, will you bring my 8 iron from the cart? That wasn't it.
Sand wedge wasn't the right play. It'll do it. But no, I mean, it's a great point about Cradle, because we played it twice, went around two times, and getting to kind of clip those shots off the mats was fun. The Cradle's supposed to be fun,
it.
Joel.
I love it. Right? Yeah, 100%.
The idea of that is fun, and
they've got music playing.
Why not make it a little bit more fun?
The course is really cool. The design is very cool. There's some tough shots. There's some easy shots. There's chances for hole in ones. You know, like it's kind of got it all. We were playing a fun little, you know, game and match. It was you and Andrew against Ashton and I. Like that was really fun. To the point where we got done with the first go round, we were like, well, we're absolutely playing that again.
We got to
like, there's no
in.
Shot. We're not playing that again. So that was great.
And the starter there, I mean, you know, as you said about caddies, like it's hit or miss with starters too. I mean, you can get some of the most lovely people in the world, and you get some people that just want you to get the hell out of their way. And thankful that day at the Cradle, the guy was awesome. And he snuck us in, you know, in between a couple of, I think, local groups. And obviously nobody cared. Everybody was fine. I think a group let us play through at one point on the Cradle that was doing a bit of a playing lesson. But a lot of fun. And also, if you're looking at a Pinehurst trip, doing Cradle in the morning, I think a lot of people think about Cradle as an evening deal. You know,
I liked it in the morning.
That's what I'm saying. I loved hitting some of those shots in the morning. I mean, again, you played a couple times in – what, an hour and a half? I mean, we fly around it.
Yeah.
But I loved feeling, even off the mats, hitting some of the chips, hitting some putts. Like, some of that interaction was way better than going to a driving range and warming up. So at least consider it as a morning warm-up to maybe playing four or two, because I thought it was nice to go out there and do that before we got going.
So then we go in and have lunch, and we took a look at the shop, you know, and I think that you definitely have to be strategic about when you want to buy gear, if you want to buy gear, mm-hmm. and kind of schedule it out. Because what you don't want to do is get to a shop when you're trying to go play soon and then be like, well, I want to buy something.
Yeah,
and then you don't get your warm up. You don't really get to see the shop, and like you miss everything. So we took a look at the shop, but we all knew like we're not buying things now because we're coming back the next, 2 days later and playing number two. So we had time set out to buy gear. So we kind of take a look at the shop, go eat, and then we go to play four.
Four is, you know, I covered the, whatever that was, the 2018 amateur. At Pinehurst, mm-hmm. and maybe 2019, I think. It was brilliant. You know, it was the first time they'd ever done two golf courses for a championship match. You know, they played four in the morning, then switched to two in the afternoon for the 36-hole finale. And it was right after, you know, you could call it a redesign. I mean, it's basically an entirely new golf course that Gil Hans has done there with number four. You hear a lot of people that go on Pinehurst golf trips say four was their favorite experience, mm-hmm. that they got a chance to play. And I mean, after getting a chance to see it, you understand why it is. It feels like it's been there for 100 years. I mean, that's what the biggest compliment you could give it.
It does. I really liked four. It's certainly a place where you can, if you're playing halfway decent, you're going to shoot a decent score there. Yep. It's not like two. It's not going to beat you up. Like there's a couple of tough holes. And yeah, if you hit a bad shot, right, that's any course. But it's there, right? It's in front of you. It's there. It's wide enough where you don't have to be super specific, and you can score a little bit. I thought that I don't want, like, two was my favorite, but man, four was really good. And they're different. So you got to separate them out a little bit and kind of understand what you're playing. Word to the wise. One is not a driver hole. And on two, favor the right side, not the left side.
I was just about to ask you that. I was going to ask you if one was a driver. So we were like, we were kind of all over the place as a group. I mean, that's no surprise if you know me at all, but we were a bit all over the place. So we get there that morning, play Cradle, and then we asked if we could get a couple of caddies. And so they were like kind of scrambling to find us a couple of caddies. And so the caddies kind of walked up to us as we were teeing off at one. And I think if they'd have been there about 5 minutes earlier, they would have talked us out of driver. You and I just pummel driver.
Oh, God.
Exactly where we're trying to hit
probably
it.
Probably the best drive I hit the whole trip.
Might have been the best one I hit on the trip, too.
Was on the only hole like you can't hit driver.
Oh, just dead. Just through the fairway, pine straw. Oh, like, have absolutely nothing. Totally. You and I actually hit pretty good golf shots to just get it, to give us a chance at getting it up and down and making par.
My second best golf shot of the whole trip was the escape, because I specifically said, like, I have to put this in the front bunker, and I was able to do it and then got up and down for a par. But this is my other favorite part, and this is hit or miss on the starters. So the starter on four, you know, and you can tell, like, they've got the same joke holstered all day long, right?
Joel, I started back in the day, same thing. You just hit him with, you hit him with the same line every time.
So he hits us with a couple of just like tried and true. And we're like, oh yeah, nicely done. And he's, you know, and then he's like, and the next thing I would suggest is you boys move up a tee. And
it's my favorite. It's my favorite thing in the world.
And we're like, you know, we're already up a tee for us, sir.
Right.
We're not trying to play back. We're going to play just like the regular white tees. And he wants us to go up to blue.
They had, like, to your point, they have no back tees set up. Like, the quote unquote back tees aren't even out there. You know what I mean?
That's
it's almost like in Scotland. They do this in Scotland a lot, where the tips are the tee up, you know, for everybody coming through.
Right. Which is, listen, it's fine.
Of course.
But it's always hilarious when then you see, and the caddies roll up and they don't get a chance to like talk with us yet. So no one's seen us swing yet.
Right.
Starter hasn't, caddies haven't, you know, and they're all like, well, yeah, just take a driver right over that bunker. And the starter's like, you should move up a tee. And you and I proceed to hit absolute scud missiles through everything. And then to hear their reaction. Yeah. The starter's like, well, good luck.
Well, I mean, and the best part, I think the best part of it was, and this is like the worst feeling in golf, is when the starter or your caddy is giving you crap about either playing a different tee, how far do you hit it, any of that, and then you hit a bad shot. And I think Andrew was first off, and he hits the slap cut thingy into the right trees. And you know that starter's going, oh, God, these guys. Yeah, oh, I bet these guys are really good. And then you and I pounded through the fairway and have just nothing, absolutely nothing there. And I make five, which was fun. And then we got into the round, and I mean, it was awesome. Again, I think for, you know, when you think about the conglomerate that is Pinehurst, like the Pinehurst Resort, they always had two. And you could hang your hat on two because it's that good of a golf course. And I was reminded when we got a chance to play two, how freaking good that golf course is, because it is absolutely sensational. I remember years ago when I played at Joel, I remember saying, this is my favorite course in America. And obviously the years have gone by and I've been able to play some other places, you know, around the country that are awesome. And, you know, your memory wanes, yada, yada, yada. But playing two again, and you're reminded of how freaking good it is, four being there now in the way four is presented, gives you two, in my opinion, championship golf courses to present to people that are interested in going to Pinehurst. And I think that is huge for the resort.
I think if I were to do Pinehurst again, and we'll get into two, and I know we'll get into two, I would like to play two twice on the trip.
Okay.
And I would, one day I would want to do 36 with two in the morning and four in the afternoon. I would want to just stay right there and play those 36 holes. That would be an adjustment I would make.
Yeah, I mean, then you can eat there. You know, the lunch was great. We had lunch there. I mean, you don't have to leave. You don't feel rushed. You don't feel like you're kind of getting pushed around. I mean, that's probably a good way to do it. I would say, I mean, as I've learned in golf trips, one of the things I try to do is to drive the least amount in a day. And I think if you do that, obviously you're just driving in. And if you're staying there at the resort, I mean, you can, in theory, just walk over, take the shuttle, and boom, you're right there.
It's just so difficult to try to plan 36 at two different courses where you've got to jump in the car in between. It's really difficult.
Totally. Totally. It's stressful. Golf trips are supposed to be stress-free, even though I know we put stress on our golf games.
Yeah.
But the one of the reasons, you know, you mentioned Bandon, and one of the reasons I think Bandon gets so much acclaim outside of obviously being on the ocean and having these unbelievable golf courses is you don't have to drive anywhere.
That's right.
They drive you everywhere. Yeah. And it's almost like a dog in your backyard. Like that leash sensor is never going off. Like you're never leaving property. And so you never have to worry about it. And I think one of the things Pinehurst has going for it is you don't drive that far. I mean, that's everything's right. relatively close, 10, 15 right. minutes away, which brings us, by the way, to one of the most fun nights of the trip, which was after we finished up with four. What did we eat? Do you know what we ate that night? Like, I don't remember any.
Yes.
Food.
Yeah, yes. We went to the
brewery.
The restaurant.
That's right.
The brewery.
Yes. We went to the Pinehurst Brewery. That's right. Yes. We went there that night. Big thanks to Martin and Phil, by the way, not just for dinner that night, but for helping us out, you know, plan this trip. They did a great job. Follow them at Home of American Golf, by the way, on social media. They do a great job of helping and planning Pinehurst trips and just kind of promoting Pinehurst in general.
Yeah.
And
they did a great job. Yeah, really good awesome. Job.
But
we got to talk college football too, which was great.
Oh my goodness, man. I mean, you were at your match, I believe.
I know when someone tells me like, oh, I'm a diehard Georgia Bulldog fan, I like my spine straightens up a little bit because I'm like, okay, this person knows what's going on. They know a lot about the sport. Like, I got to mind my P's and Q's here.
Yeah, Barton and Phil were great. So we did Pinehurst Brewery, and then we went back to Tallamore. And this was the first of what I like to call the unplanned perfect parts
yes.
of golf trips.
Yes.
When there is nothing on the itinerary or agenda, and we're driving into Tallamore, it's probably 8 o'clock. The sun is starting to set.
Yeah, but not down yet.
Yep. And it has a huge, huge putting green there, Joel.
Yes. Yes. And we're still early enough in the trip where it's like, I don't care that we played golf all day. Like, we're all just like, we want to bet. We want to go out and putt. And like, there was some talk that there was going to be lights on that driving range. And I was like, I'm hitting balls. Like, there's for sure. But the lights weren't on. So then it just became like, well, let's putt. And everyone immediately is like, done. Let's go putt. And so we start putting.
So we start putting alt shot putting, which I've never done before. And I would highly, highly recommend it to anybody that's going to like a Himalaya spot, or if you're going to like Erin Hills, you know, any of those places with the putting course.
Yes.
And you're just out there to kind of have some fun and bet, you know, 10, 20 bucks a hole, like have some beers, have some cigars. I mean, we'd set everybody up. I mean, everybody was set with whatever they wanted to do to their body at that point. And then we started doing alt shot putting, and it was awesome, and it wasn't going to stop. So what do you do when the sun's going down and you don't have lights? You pull the minivan right up to the putting green and turn the brights on, which is what we did. And to Tallamore and to everybody there, if this is the first time you're hearing of this, thank you guys, because some of the most fun we had on the trip was that experience. Oh, and we stayed out there. We had to stay out there till 10, right?
Oh, at a minimum, I think it was later. I think it was 10:30 or 11.
Okay.
And what was so good is that this putting green wasn't just big and flat. It kind of tiered. There were three distinct tiers, and it kind of, you know,
crazy tiers,
really fun, crazy tiers. And they were big, right? So you could be on the middle tier. There was a few holes there, and then you could be all the way down the bottom. There was a couple of holes down there. And then there were like two other tiers on the top and like a plateau in there. Well, once the sun went down and the minivan is the only lights that we have. Well, then there are, because of the ridges, there are parts of the green with flags that are pitch black.
Oh, yeah. You can't see anything.
And we would like choose those holes. We're like, all right, we're going into the abyss over there. Like, and you got to alt shot it. And then the other great part about it is like, okay, no one can walk to see where those balls ended up until everyone's hit.
Yep.
And so we would all hit. No one knows anything. We're like, feels, I think it was good, guys. I think it was really good. And then we would all walk up, and then one of us has to, in the dark, sit there, and then we would start talking about the read. I think
so great. I mean, you can't see it. You would have to use your iPhone flashlight to just see where the golf balls were, and you would get like Andrew helping with the read. I'm like, yes. We can't see anything. I can't even see you.
Yes. I would say, like, there are those little glow sticks you can throw in holes if you don't want to just putt into the dark, and if you are like us and degenerate and you're up at places like Ballyneal, or you know, like any place that you can be out in the pitch dark and be putting. I recommend bringing some, like a sleeve of glow golf balls.
Yes, absolutely.
Because that would help. And then like a glow stick that you just throw in the actual hole. I've done that before at places. That's something that we didn't foresee on this trip. So we didn't have it. So while we had an immense amount of fun, we could have been out there till midnight if we had the glow balls going.
Yeah, and I mean, to the Talamore Resort, I mean, they should embrace that as well. I mean, I feel like totally. That putting green is so much fun. And they have a light. And they turned it on for us the second night. And
it was
a substantial difference in terms of how you could actually, you know, you could like see things, which was helpful. Golf is relatively visual, but
I've got a picture, by the way. We should post it. Post it.
Just like the darkness, and you can
it
see.
It is so dark.
It is. It was. Yeah. I mean, the cameras that you know, and the cameras that make it more look more light than it appears. But we're doing that at the trip we do, Joel, in Tubac every year. We're going to do closest to, like pitch dark closest to one of the island par threes. And I'm going to bring one of those, you know, those glow strings that you can wrap around a flagstick. Because, again, I mean, this is the thing about a golf trip is nobody wants the night to end. You know, the night wants to continue on. And, some golf trips are at a bar till 12, 12:31. That's not really our group. And so, for us, it was more about the golf. But we finished up, went to bed, got up the next morning. And this was my only rule, Joel, when we were talking about doing a Pinehurst golf trip, my only rule of the entire golf trip was if we do this, we have to do 36 holes an entire day at Tobacco Road.
Yeah.
We have to play 18 in the morning and then we have to have lunch and we've got to play 18 in the afternoon because I got a chance to play Tobacco Road and we were out there for the amateur. And, you know, I think Strands is a genius and I think the golf course is brilliant. Yeah, that actually looks way more lit than it was. Joel's showing me the picture right now of us out on the greens grinding for the $20 we're gonna win off Ashton. But
Tobacco Road
is it's up there in terms of layouts that I've been lucky enough to play.
Yeah,
and I think there are a couple of keys to Tobacco Road, and we'll get into this, but. One key, because you either love it or you hate it. There's no middle ground for Tobacco Road.
I think I know the point of demarcation, by the way. We talked about this.
It's a skill set. I mean, you have got to be able to carry the ball.
220?
230, 240 in the air, I think, you know, depending on which tees you're playing. And I'd say it really helps if you're a single-digit handicap. Because if you're hitting the ball short and you're hitting the ball sideways, it is really, really difficult. But if you can hit it relatively close to where you're trying to hit it routinely, it is a very playable place. And the visuals throw you off, but there's a lot more room on this golf course than you think.
100%. I loved the visuals. I loved the course. Loved the course. And immediately, six holes in, I was like, my dad could never play here.
Yep. So, I think you and I agreed on that. Yep.
And so, like, if you roll out there and you're a 12, well, and it's not even handicapped so much as that shot you were talking about. Like, you've got to be able to carry the ball consistently 220 to 230 yards and hit it somewhat where you're looking. If you can do that, Tobacco Road will be a phenomenal experience for you. Phenomenal experience. Scorable, fun, all of it. Layout's great, undulation, quirky holes. Phenomenal holes. They're bending. They're going down. They're going up. I thought it was awesome. I loved it. I loved the par threes. I loved some of the tee shots that were difficult. You had the one that's like a ski slope. You can hit a three wood like 480 yards, you know? I'm looking and there was like a group behind us and I'm seeing this guy, you know, and he's got like two Donjoys on, knee braces. And I'm like, that has to be a miserable day for him. So, and that's not a knock because I'm telling you, I suggest, man, get to Tobacco Road. That place was awesome.
What'd you think on the first tee? I mean, I built it up a lot. I was really excited about that day. I think all of us were just pumped that we were going to be at a place, you know, 20, 30 minutes away from, you know, the centralized part of Pinehurst. It's in the middle of nowhere. You know, you pull up to this kind of wooden-y, you know, clubhouse, like log cabin looking clubhouse. That's awesome. What were your thoughts on that first tee when, I mean, people have seen the pictures. If you haven't, look up the first tee at Tobacco Road.
It looks like a little saddle.
I mean, it looks like you have, you know, 8 yards of fairway on a par five. Like, what were your thoughts hitting that first tee shot?
I bought a yardage book. And therefore, I was like, oh, okay. There's like a ton of room up there.
And they have the GPS on the carts as well.
Yeah. And like, I'm staring at the yardage book and I'm like, oh, okay. Like, left is not great. I've got 8 million yards right.
Yes.
Even though it doesn't look like it. Like, the 10 tee and 10 fairway is all right. Like, I can go. So once I got that in my head, then it didn't seem so difficult at all. And in fact, I enjoyed it because it minimized like my visual of where I was trying to aim. It made me aim pretty specific, even though I did block it right in the second round. But it's not a tough shot. And once you get that in your head, I loved it. And then I started to embrace that there's a few of those out there. 18 is similar to that. You know, like there's a few holes where you just have to get into your head. What was it on the back nine? Is it 13 or 14, that par five?
Yeah. When you want to hug the right side.
I mean, hug the right side means seem like you hit it in the forest. And if you think that you hit it in the middle of the forest, perfect.
Ashton, I think, made eagle birdie. I think he played the whole 3-under that day. But again, you hit 7-iron out in the fairway and you lay up, or you hit driver
in the forest,
into the forest, and you get up there and there's a 50-yard wide fairway.
Yes, he hit his tee shot. Well, we both hit our tee shots before, and I'm like, oh, those should be good. Look at, like, yours was drawing a little bit, I was cutting a little bit, and I was like, yeah, I mean, that'll get over there. He hits his, and I was like, he blocked that like 50 right. We get up there, he's dead Central Park, dead middle of the fairway, and we're like searching for our balls in the trees.
That was the hole where I hit it off the hill and it hit the hole and didn't go in for bogey. So
yes!
That was a really nice double that I made there. Can we speak just for a couple minutes on just Ashton Woods just lighting Tobacco Road on fire?
Yeah. So was it the second round?
The first round
he played well.
The first round he was 4-under with 3 to go, and I think he shot even.
He shot even because he finished like bogey double double.
Yeah.
And
something like that. Yeah.
I think he shot 1 over. He was 4-under going into 16 tee, and ended up shooting 1 over because he went bogey double double.
Yeah. Okay.
Remember? And so I didn't see him at lunch, to be honest. Remember you and Andrew and I, like, were eating lunch and I was kind of like, where's Ashton? And we were all like, nah, it was like, let
he's
him,
fine. He's,
fine. He's fine. He's fine. He'll be fine. I went out, I had not hit the driver well. I hit a couple, tee shots or, balls on the range. And then Ashton rolls out and was on fire.
On a mission, I would say, and on fire. Yes.
He played so good in the afternoon and shoots 67.
Shot 67 with a double on 16, and that double was literally
our fault
because we talked.
We all baited him into a shot.
Yeah. Because I wanted to hit driver on the tee at 16. 16, if you've never played Tobacco Road, is one of all the difficult tee shots in terms of visually seeing what you're hitting to. It's probably the most demanding. It's a... Were you hit hybrid? Is that what you hit off the tee?
I hit, yeah, it's like a 5-wood hybrid type of a deal. So it's like a 235 club, right? So I'm hitting that shot that we're talking about, 235. It's fatter than you think it is, right? Yeah. So I just hit it up there. Andrew hits it up there. You and Ashton wanted to go for it because it's not a long hole from hitting that 5-wood, you know, 235 into the middle of the fairway. You look up and I'm hitting a lob wedge just kind of like up the hill to the green. So again, you can get a driver up there. You guys wanted to drive it. So Andrew and I drive up to the green to let you guys know when you can hit. And we're looking back, and just from our vantage point, I know we didn't talk about this, there was clearly some sort of like playing lesson going on. Like, you guys were deep in thought about swings. You guys are back there like doing, and we're like, Andrew and I are staring back, and literally our conversation is, what do you think they're talking about?
It's like the 34th hole of a day, of like the third day of a golf trip. We're like Martin Hall back there. Yes. I mean, he like the balloons out.
And Andrew, like only Andrew could 34 holes in on a day, goes, I don't know, man. I don't effing care.
This is true. And you know what? It's spot on. Spot on with this mentality.
I was dying up there. I didn't tell you that story, but that's what our conversation was like.
It's so good.
So then the shots get hit. And from your guys, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you've got to both feel like, well, I mean, you pulled yours a little bit, and we all see it.
Yeah, mine was right of the line, but it was like in the rough, like right
up the hill in the rough, right? And we all see it. Like, all of us see it. Ashton, because he's on a heater, hits a perfect shot, right? He's got to hit that right where he's looking, right?
Yeah, I mean, maybe, from your vantage point? Maybe 5 yards right of his line. Yeah, I mean, it's very, very close to perfect, yes.
And we're looking at this, and Andrew and I are like, oh, man, that is so good, right? And there's a bunker right of the green that's literally just in the hill. So it's not like a bunker like this. It's like this,
yeah,
right? And then above it is also like that, and it's just native. And the ball lands. You can tell it's going to land before the bunker. And both Andrew and I are like, oh, perfect. He's going to be in the bunker. Because it's just an easy little, like, splash it out, yep, and you're going to make a birdie, right? And it hits. And trampolines over the bunker and just sits in the native grass. And we were beside ourselves. I went to my knees. My hands are on my head. I'm like, no. Because we think that he's going to literally be having to, like, hit it like this, like, above his head. So Andrew's like, maybe he can sit on your shoulders. And like, you can get in the bunker. And I was like, okay, I'll get in the bunker and he can sit on my shoulders and he can try to like whack it out of the native stuff. But he tried to get up there, didn't have a stance, tried to hit it left-handed, barely moved, ends up making double and still shoots 67.
Yeah, double and 16 and shoots 67. Made birdie on 17, the par three. The pin was in a favorable place, which was nice. But I mean, you know, this was a guy that, again, was 4 under with 3 to go in the morning. I mean, I don't know the count. I'd have to look it up, but I'd love to know how many birdies and eagles he made that day at Tobacco Road, because you'd have to think it.
Didn't he make three eagles? I thought he made three eagles that day.
Did he make three eagles on the day? Did he? I thought he made three eagles on the trip.
I don't know, man. Maybe. They were all running. There was a lot of eagles. I was like, geez. Yeah, he eagled on number two. He made an eagle the next day, but man.
Yeah, maybe it was three across that. But yeah, I think he made an eagle each round at Tobacco Road, and he played great. And it was fun to watch. I mean, Tobacco Road, again, as I've said, it's a must-see once in your life. Like, you need to go see that golf course and play it. And my advice to everybody is to do exactly what we did. I think it's key to play it twice in a row.
Yeah,
I
agree.
I think when you see it the first time, there are, even with the yardage book, even with the GPS, even if you had a caddy that had been out there a million times walking with you, there's still golf shots where once you play it once, I think about four, the par five a lot, you know, the fairway's huge. It's huge. There's a big bunker right and an even bigger bunker left. And the hole makes you visually, because of the way it's designed, makes you want to hit it right and be safe, but you actually want to play it left, and you can actually play less club and go left. Like, you could hit three wood or a driving iron and hit it left up by that bunker, and you're going to have 180 into a par five.
Yeah.
But if you play it quote unquote safe and keep it right, then you're going to have 4 or 5 into a pretty tricky green. And so there are holes like that where you go, oh man, I got to hit this shot again. And I think that's why playing it twice in a day helps.
Totally agree with you. There are gettable fives once you know the line off the tee. And so again, that second round is so key. Almost all the fives, like,
totally.
Remember, all of our lines changed just a little bit on all the fives.
Off of the first hole, outside of the first hole, all of the fives are a totally different line after you play it one time.
There's a drivable four, which is a really fun hole. That's the fifth hole right after the five you're talking about.
Yep.
Par threes are really good. You get downhill, you get uphill, you've got tight, you've got wide, like, good par threes, mix of par threes. And then you can get yourself into some positions where you're hitting shots that no other course on the planet can give you. Like, what is it? Is it the par five 13th? Is it 12 or 13?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think it's 11. I think it's 11. It's right after. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So it's 11, but I'm in the bunker under the green. Folks, I'm hitting a bunker shot that literally has to go over my house.
Yeah, totally.
It's two stories. Yep. It's two stories. Like, you never get that shot anywhere else. And obviously, if I were to play that again, in no universe would I be trying to hit at the right flag. Like, you've got to just play it out left, but yes. I play at the flag and it's down in that bunker. But I hit it out.
You got it out.
Like, it's deeper than the bunker at the stadium course at PGA West.
Yeah, the one that's always famous on the left side. I mean, maybe that's twice as deep, honestly. I mean, it's like that severe.
Yes.
And it's like auto bogey for most people if you're in it. But again, it allows you and gives you the opportunity, if you pull the golf shot off, to hit a memorable shot that you'll remember, you know, for a few years.
I love Tobacco Road.
Tobacco Road was a lot of fun. We obviously played 36. We were in carts all day, kind of going back to the carts thing, which was a lot of fun. Had a great match. I mean, that also, you know, enhances the experience.
I'm going to say this because I think you're too nice to say this. If you're playing golf anywhere, and you lose your ball mark, unless it was like your father's grandfather's silver dollar,
I remember this.
Don't drive back and try to
what
find
did
it.
What did the guy say? What was it? What was the course? Cog Hill. Yeah.
He was like, hey, did you guys pick up my ball mark? No.
I mean, I've been asked. I'm 39 years old, Joel. I've played a ton of golf in my life. I've been asked for just about everything that I've left.
Not that.
I've never been asked for just, again, like you said, hey, there's a 1974 silver dollar here that means a lot to me. Did you guys find it? But some dude was like,
and all of us would have been like, no, and let us help you try to find that. But when you say like, I lost my Cog Hill ball mark, my eyes rolled so far back in my head. And I was like, please don't see me. Yeah, so listen, well-meaning guys. And they seemed like great dudes. And I think that they listened to your podcast. Love you guys. But like Cog Hill ball mark, like chalk it up.
It's an
don't
L.
Need to
it's
don't. That's an L.
Just an L.
That's
an we're L. We're just doing that's that. Right. So when you play 36 in a day, you go back to the house and you chill and you relax. No. We did an eye putt in again. At the Tallamore, we convinced one of the outside service dudes to turn the light on. We told them we would surely turn it off, which we did. That was the night we got Chick-fil-A. I don't think the putting went as late as. It had the first night.
We were
it was
tired.
Still intense.
We
I
were
think
tired.
Tired, and also understanding that
we're playing number two.
We had an early tee time.
Early.
The next morning at number two, and mm-hmm. I mean, for everybody that, you know, I mean, everybody that's ever gotten the opportunity to play number two, I mean, it's, you know, it's up there. It's with Pebble. It's with, you know, some of the privates in the country where you are looking forward to that round for weeks, if not months, in advance, and you want to be prepped and ready to go because you also understand how tough the golf course is going to be. And so I think a lot of us were itching to at least get a few Z's in so we could be ready.
I think order can be hard because it's all about availability. I would have stayed one more day. If I could do this whole trip again, one more day, it's hard with kids. And like, I get it. And that's the whole reason I'm like, hey, I got to get back because I've got three boys and need to get back. I would have loved to have switched tobacco and two because I was a little tired
playing two.
Not only was it an early round, but we had just played basically like 36 holes each of the previous 2 days. And I wasn't at my best, in particular when I got to like hole 10, 11, 12, like you start getting into the round, you're walking. And in hindsight, I was like, man, if I could have just been a little fresher, whether it was going to bed a little bit sooner, playing that course one day earlier, I would have felt a lot better with it. Granted, I shoot 80, and that's like just a straight kick in the you know what.
So we start on 10. They do a 10 and one tee and a 10 tee start there, I think, for most of the days. I'm not sure how often that happens, but we started on 10. We were told by one of the fellas that we worked with on the trip that if you make a two on Pinehurst number two, then you go in after you go into the restaurant there, you show them the scorecard and they give you
any two.
They give you a coin.
You can drop it from the fairway. You can make a birdie on any of the par threes and they give you a coin.
So that was pretty much our goal for the day.
Yeah.
I mean, going into it, we were like all going, okay, like we're going to try to play well. We're going to try to have some fun. We're all a bit tired.
Got to make a two.
So we start on 10. So we get the 17 par three, famous par three. I hit one of the better shots I hit of the week. I hit it about probably 10, 12 feet. You hit it a foot and a half.
A foot and a half? Almost. I mean, and it was like trending. Can you imagine?
What do they do if you make a one? They give you a one coin?
I don't know.
You made a one on two?
They would have had to resodded the tee box because that would have gone ham.
It was like we're getting ready for 18. Like, you know what's coming with 18. Like, we're about to make the turn. Everybody's kind of waking up in the round. You hit just a brilliant, I don't know, what was that, like a five iron?
It was a six. You hit seven. I hit six. And I kind of drew it in. Oh, that was my best shot of the day. That was very, very fun. I will say, like, that course, you have got to be – I let my frustration get to me a little bit at one point in the round. You will get a bounce, a lie that you feel like you don't deserve. And you have got to just get over it.
Yep.
That's what the course is. And I got frustrated at one point with one of those, and it did not help me. And I lost my concentration for like two straight holes and made two straight double bogeys. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, there you have it, Glatt, like way to go. But you've got to go in knowing that you're going to hit a shot that you feel like is good. And it's going to be in a spot where you don't really have anything.
I mean, not only do you not have anything, but if you do that in and around the greens, I mean, you're just, it's just toast. That golf course is everything people say it is. I mean, around the greens is super tough. You can short side yourself. You can hit a good shot. It rolls off the green. Like, I think going into
don't it. Don't you think those are the some of the best green complexes that we've ever played together? Oh,
I mean, it is. They are just, like I said, I mean, I you know, I remember this was like, I was playing like in an Oakley Pro-Am out in North Carolina somewhere. And I remember we played two. And I think this was before they came in and did all the restoration work. So it wasn't even all those sandy areas. It was still trees. And I remember thinking this place is as good as anybody, any golf course I've played that I could remember. And then when you get back out there, you're reminded once again that, listen, you can hit good golf shots. I mean, you can hit good golf shots and get rewarded, but a mediocre golf shot is going to get penalized at Pinehurst number two.
This is my favorite part about great courses. Great courses reward really good golf shots, and everything else is just slapped away like a bug. And that's what the greens do, right? Yeah. Like, you can't skinny it up on these greens. You can't hit it a little fat. The landing areas are small for how big the greens look, and you better have the right shape on it. You can't be trending. You can't be hitting a cut towards a right pin that lands right of middle, because it'll just kind of spin away, you know, like it's, and I loved it. It reminded me of Oakmont in that sense, where you were just the demanding nature of the iron play was what I loved. I loved that about, and the entire day on number two and those green complexes. I made my mind up early. I'm not a great short game player. And I made my mind up early. Like, I'm going to bump 4 and 5 irons from,
oh my gosh,
from around the green.
Genius with that shot.
And it saved me. How many times? I got up and down 4 or 5 times with that shot.
It's important to, I think what you said is smart, and anybody going to this area, not just Pinehurst number two, if you don't live in this area with this type of turf where it's sandy and it's a bit unstable around these greens, I think finding a shot and really committing to that for the week, not for the day, not for the front nine, but for the week, and maybe even spending a little bit of time before you go on these trips. Like, I tell people when they're going to Bandon and they're going to Scotland, spend a couple of weeks before you go hitting shots where you keep it low. Like, maybe if you don't know how to do it, find somebody that can help you learn that shot, because it is imperative to be able to hit a 7-iron and knock it down. It's imperative to hit a 3-iron and knock it down. And there at the in Pinehurst and around that area, it is imperative to have a shot around those greens that you're comfortable hitting that stays on the ground. Maybe it's a putter, maybe it's a hybrid, or maybe it's like you hit and it's that 4 and 5 iron.
Yeah. And I learned this shot because I play on similar grass here. So it's Bermuda, which means as it's coming out of its dormant season, it's still very grainy, which means sand is exposed and then the grass grows sideways. So it's not sitting up where the ball sits up perfectly.
Right.
It's kind of sitting down, and any leading edge that hits that sideways turf is going to grab. Right. And so I just play a 4-iron a little bit off of my right foot and take a putting grip, not an interlock, but a putting grip, and putt it. And it stays up above the turf just a little bit, and I don't get the trampoline from the hybrid. So I love that shot, and I've kind of learned it from playing around here.
Ashton made eagle on 4, kind of going back to the Ashton eagle world. Hit a great drive on the par 5, hit 3 wood to like 25 feet, made this impossible putt, broke like 7 feet. He made it right in the middle.
It was so good. It was awesome. So good.
Yeah. And then I on the next hole is at par 3, and I hit a really good shot in on 5 and rolled in about a 25 footer for my 2 to join you. And I was going to be bummed because I hit a good putt on 17 when you made birdie there, and it just slipped out. I think maybe it just slipped out, or I just
think
it
slipped out
or something.
Yeah.
And I was firing for those coins. So I was very happy that happened. I played well that day, stumbled on the way in, but just to remind
you shoot?
Again, 75, and I finished bogey double, I think. So
that's right.
I had
that's
a chance
right.
to.
Which, folks, like playing shooting 75 on two is hard.
Two is a place where you get done with the round and you're adding up the bogeys you made and you can't believe you made that many, but it's just what the golf course does to you is And like you said, how many great shots are you hitting per round at any golf course? Like not a lot. And you have to hit great golf shots at Pinehurst number two. You know, Joel, like it made me think of stuff like Martin Keimer running away with it there.
Yes.
How good he must have been playing to not just win at Pinehurst number two, but to run away from the field. Like, you've got to be so dialed around those greens.
And not even just around those greens, but the iron play. Again, like, it is – that and Oakmont are the two courses where I'm just like, if you're not hitting your irons – because, again, like, if you don't flush the iron, it's not stopping.
Right.
Right. And like, if you're not playing the proper shape, landing in the proper area, it's just going to roll off the green. And so like the level of iron play to shoot what that guy does under open conditions, like, can you imagine how much more firm and faster the green are? Like, what?
You show up and be like, I'm out, man. I got nothing here. I can't play this place. Yes. Everybody would. That's again, yes. It kind of goes back to the difference in that level of play and everybody else. But that was our last run. I agree with you, by the way, on your point about number two is if I'm planning a trip to Pinehurst, I'm going to put two in the middle of the itinerary. I want to play some golf leading up to it. Mm-hmm. I don't want it to be my last round. Maybe it's the day before the last round, like you said. I also love the idea of kind of finishing your trip with the Tobacco Road Day because I just think it's so fun. You're going to leave on a high, you know, because
– And it wasn't quite as demanding, right? Like, it wasn't as demanding of a walk. We were in carts. It wasn't as – like, the shots weren't demanding. They were specific. You know, which is a difference. Whereas like you get on four, you're walking, you get on two, you're walking, and there's some demanding shots, right? Whereas Tobacco Road, there's just specific shots and it's more fun and you're in a cart in terms of that nature.
Yeah, it was awesome. I highly recommend Pinehurst. Would you agree with that?
Totally. Totally. Can't wait to go back.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing too about that place is, you know, we were kind of comparing it to some other places and you go to abandon or you go to a Stream Song, you go to a Cabot, like you're playing those golf courses because that's where you're at. At Pinehurst, you can play the Pinehurst courses, or you could go play Tobacco Road, or maybe you get an invite to Mid Pines or Country Club of North Carolina. Like there's so many different places that are going to change your experience that I think you and I could go on three or four trips to Pinehurst and have totally different experiences simply because of the amount of golf and the abundance of the sport that lives in that area. But you know, if you're a golfer, like you and I were driving around, we're like on Zillow, like looking at homes.
Yeah.
Like, this would be awesome.
I was like,
awesome,
I want
to
retire here.
Joel Klatt's going to be a Pinehurst guy. I think that's on the horizon.
I love it. A couple of little things that I would say for the trip. Okay. And this is, if you're playing at Pinehurst, you're inevitably going to be driving unless you're at the resort, I would say. You're going to be kind of driving around, which is fine because it's all really close. If you're a coffee drinker, work in a coffee run before you get to the course every day because that was hit or miss.
Oh, so, we ran into an issue at Pinehurst. I remember we were like one of the first off and the coffee place didn't open until 7:30 and we were off before then. So yeah, good point.
So just like plan on getting your coffee beforehand. And to be honest, like that was the only thing that I thought, okay, like definitely would want to change that on a daily basis. Cause I'm I love coffee. Same. Wasn't myself before drinking coffee. So, definitely working that in.
What's your coffee consumption, work days? Like now when you're like calling a game, are you having a coffee? Cause the one thing I've noticed myself broadcasting is I will drink coffee during broadcast days, especially when like, you know, golf broadcast can be 5-6 hours long. Mm-hmm. You know, you're up there for 2.5-3 hours, but I don't want to get jittery, you know? So are you like a during the game coffee guy?
Okay. Yeah. And I drink one of two things, unless it's really hot. I either drink coffee or I drink, it's really gross actually, but hot water. So I ask him like, hey, will you go get me a tea, but don't put the like tea bag in it, a hot tea. And I was like, I'll do that. So they bring the hot tea and then they bring the hot water, and I just drink the hot water. And the reason is because tea gives me too much saliva and I have a hard time talking, like Gatorade. I can't do Gatorade either, but the hot water keeps my voice going. Cause inevitably this is like October and November and it's a little bit cool out there and your voice can start to like crack a little bit. Yep. And so I have hot drinks, coffee or just straight hot water.
I think Buck was a hot water guy, if I remember.
Yeah,
I think
he told me about it.
Is that
He's
right?
He's the one that was like, because I was telling, and again, these are just little tricks of the trade. He was so great about this. And I was talking to him about how on cold days, I wasn't confident projecting, you know, because I feel like I would need to cough. And he was like, oh, you got to drink hot water. And I was like, what? And then I tried it and he was exactly right.
Awesome trip. As I mentioned earlier, big thanks to Martin and Phil and Shane for kind of the help in planning it. You know, I will say, you know, we're in the sports world. Like you mentioned off the top, you're obsessed with golf. You know, the way I look at golf and the way I look at golf, like trips are these things. You're going with close friends of yours that you enjoy being around that are like-minded and are going to want to experience a similar trip to what you experience. And we all have kids and, you know, they're all different ages and we all have wives at home that are amazing and kind of, you know, allow us to kind of gallivant around the mm-hmm. country and do these types of mm-hmm. things. And to get to go on a trip like this with the group we went on, everybody could play. It was so much fun. I was bummed it was as short as it was simply because
I know
we had so much fun doing it and it could have been 2 or 3 days longer. And I don't think it would have beat anybody up. But, you know, I mean, I these things end, then I'm just like thinking about where's the next one. Like, where can we go next?
100%. 100%. And I would kind of end off with where I started. It was, and it's not hidden because we all know where it's at. It's a gym. If you want to take a really cool golf trip, go to Pinehurst. You'll really enjoy it. And then secondly, just know the type of trip that you want to create. You know, if you want to play, because I know guys at my club, they want to play once a day, find a great dinner, maybe play some pickleball, maybe, you know, go find all these other things. Fine. If that's what you want to do on a getaway guys trip, then be about it. If you want to go and you want to play as much golf as possible, then you got to know that that's your goal as well. But that was a cool spot.
Yeah.
I can't wait to go back. I can't wait to just do another trip. I love doing golf. Golf trips are now becoming some of my favorite things to do in life.
A couple of little like just items was our kitchen counter at the villa at the Tallamore just would just accumulate just like crap and golf balls and Sharpies and ball markers, like as the week would go on, like the last day, it's just this, it looks like somebody emptied their bag there. And then the funniest part to me, and I just texted a picture to the group a couple days ago, was we'd like finish a round and you have like an old golf ball or two, you know, that you use during the round. We just put them in the corner of the minivan.
Yes.
And by the end of the trip, there are probably like 30 golf balls of all different brands just in this corner. And when I think it was who returned the car, I
have no idea. Was it
me and Andrew returned the car? Like,
oh, no,
we're
Ashton
taking our bags out.
Together.
There's golf balls just all everywhere, just all over the minivan. We're like, well, we should have taken these out before the bags came out. But
if you're like going to Pinehurst, by the way, you've got to rent a minivan.
Get the minivan. Always
get the minivan. Two captain's chairs, minivan. It fits the bags. It fits everything. It's comfortable. The minivan is so clutch. Don't get a truck. Do not get an SUV. Like, it doesn't fit. It doesn't. You will hate trying to get everything in and out of an SUV. Get a minivan.
It doesn't look as cool than getting the Tahoe, but
who cares?
We're like old and not cool anyway. So it's just like, I'll cruise a minivan every day. I'm probably not going to buy one, but I will say in that instance, into it, very into it.
Yeah. Like when we pulled up to Chick-fil-A in the drive-thru, I felt very cool.
I was okay with it.
Yeah.
With the golf balls rolling around. That is Joel Klatt. As I mentioned off the top, make sure you check out his podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, wherever you get your podcast. Very fun. We are basically 2 weeks away from basketball and hockey ending. Mm-hmm. And then just in the true doldrums of summer leading up to college football. So people's focus, if it hadn't already turned to college football, we'll be going there very quick. And Joel's going to have you covered. Joel, appreciate it. Thanks so much for the time.
You bet, man.
Thanks for coming on the trip. We had a lot of fun. We'll do it again soon. Okay.
You got it, brother. See you.
A huge thanks to Joel for taking the time chatting about our Pinehurst trip. That was a lot of fun. Hope to do that again very, very soon, anywhere in and around the country, maybe outside the country. You never know. But a big thanks to Joel. He's a busy man for the time. Make sure you check out his podcast, The Joel Klatt Show. It is awesome and will get you amped and jazzed for college football as we get closer and closer to the start of that late in the summer. Hope you guys have an awesome week. I'm going to be up in Wisconsin shooting something very new and very fun alongside my pals at Scratch. So that'll be coming your way in the next few months. I'm amped to get back to Wisconsin, one of my favorite golfing places in the entire country. And we'll be back next week. Have a great one.